Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Man, sometimes you just hit it out of the park for 2 hours on a Friday. I think we're doing that today. Just a great couple hours lined up for you. Second hour, Jason Everett will be here to talk about chastity, because that's what Jason Everett does. And the dynamic Mr. Everett will be here to answer questions and take calls for a whole hour. This hour, Dr. Stacy Triscanos is here with us for the entire hour. We'll talk a little bit about science and reproduction and abortion and pro-life and all that. As scientists learn more and more about the early stages of prenatal development, some people argue that the scientific facts contradict what pro-life advocates have had to say. And we know that, for example, that a very high percentage of pregnancies end in early stage miscarriage. And abortion advocates are then quick to ask, if most embryos die anyway, what difference does it make if a woman chooses to use birth control or to end a pregnancy? So as science finds out about how valuable the cells of embryonic human beings are, we're confronted with the question about, well, shouldn't these be used to help disease and disability in already born humans? And these questions sometimes linger in the mind and make it difficult for people to accept what pro-life folks have to say. So which side is science actually on? Does it show us a picture of the early development of human beings that contradicts the claims of pro-life advocates? 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Our topic this hour, does science trash pro-life arguments? And our guest, as I said, is Dr. Stacy Triscanos. She's the author of Science Was Born of Christianity, the Teaching of Father Stanley L. Yockey, and Particles of Faith, a Catholic Guide to Navigating Scientists. She and her husband, Jose, have 7 children, and they live in Texas. Dr. Triscanos, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me back on.
Yeah, I think in that introduction, I only pronounced your name 2 different ways. Often I'll get 3 or 4 different pronunciations in there, but I think I'm down to 2 now.
We're good.
Okay.
Yeah. We're good.
All right. So what do you make of this? Well, first of all, maybe you could tell us some of the science of the early development of human beings. Is it really a scientific fact that humans in the embryonic stage or right after the embryonic stage maybe are lost, that a high percentage of those are never born?
It certainly seems to be. I mean, the first scientific fact that we are always going to be confident about is that there is a beginning to a human life, an individual human life, and that beginning is rightly placed at the beginning of fertilization, which is itself a process. But the very first moment of fertilization, that's when the human being begins to exist, the human organism. But one of the most jarring statistics, at least for me, when I tried to argue with pro-choice people, because I did a lot, is that this statistic that you see different numbers like 30 to 50 or 30 to 70. At the ends of it, it's 30 to 80% of fertilized eggs, zygotes. Mm-hmm. Never survive to birth. And that's a really troubling number, because if you're a Catholic woman and you're like, I'm going to be open to life, you have to also face that fact. Well, I won't call it a fact, that study from medical research that suggests strongly that probably most humans are never born, which is a really hard thing to wrap your head around. And the pro-choice people challenge us on that and say, well, if your God has ordained that most humans are never even born, then why does that make abortion wrong? Why does that mean that human life is special? Wouldn't you conclude, based on these numbers, that human life really isn't special, or that death before birth is actually the norm? And I want to make sure people know how to respond to that, because as a convert myself, I was stumped by that number. And I've thought about it. And of course, Catholicism gives us a wonderful, rich, beautiful, fully logical answer to that question.
Okay, so we have to admit then that there is a high likelihood that most human beings are never born.
It seems that way. I can post studies. There's studies going all the way back to the 80s where they did studies on women and they measured their hormone levels and they detected, just like in natural family planning, we can detect when a woman is ovulating and then pregnant. They detected that and they also then knew when those miscarriages happened.
But okay, so I'm going to just throw an argument out at you. It's an absurd argument, but I want to see if it strikes you, because I'm just thinking about this week. Senator McCain was diagnosed with glioblastoma, and about 90% of people who get that die within 5 years. So, by the logic that these folks are advocating, doesn't that mean then that we should kill people or be able to kill people with glioblastoma? Because if you're going to die anyways, we should just be able to kill you.
Yeah, just kill everybody, because we're all going to die anyway. That's the right way to push it. And it marries perfectly with our insistence that human life is sacred, because, you know, I find the logic is unflinching, and that's what makes it so difficult for people. But Christianity doesn't back down from a hard truth. We treat that embryo in the very first moments of sperm and egg contact, as far as we can possibly know in science, when the human being first begins to exist, we have to, we must, we are compelled to, by faith, grant that embryo all the rights of personhood. I'm not saying that we know it's the person. I'm saying the church tells us we have to assume there's a human body, there's a human soul, and we have to treat it the same way we would treat any other human as much as we can. We have to respect its right to life.
So, but the church also asks that we use natural methods in regulating births, whether we want to increase the chance of becoming pregnant or decrease the chance of becoming pregnant. So that means, as you said, a Catholic woman then, a Catholic couple, but the great burden of it falling primarily on the Catholic woman, because she is experiencing a situation there where she's thinking, okay, I'm open to life. And each month, then perhaps a high percentage of times, it may be that a child is conceived and lost. So you're saying that this creates a sense of maybe anxiety or angst.
Yeah, or despair.
Really?
It certainly does. It really, really does. I remember my thought was, wait a minute, the Catholic Church is telling me that if I am going to be Catholic, I have to be open to life. And science is telling me that means I'm going to be open to death. And I had a miscarriage, and I ended up having five. But after that first one, I was like, I don't get this. But again, like I said, the church goes on with its logic. The atheist, there's a scientist, Dr. John Goldenring from back in the 80s, New York Medical College. He actually, in a review journal in medical ethics, he actually made fun of women like me who pushed that logic all the way. He said, if women who are pro-life are going to push their logic to its fullest conclusion, they should be having religious ceremonies after every menstrual cycle on the chance that some miscarriage happened and you didn't know about it.
That's very glib.
I didn't like it. I didn't appreciate it at all. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to speak up about it, because I don't want other women to feel that way. Here's the deal, moms and dads out there and everybody else out there. The deal is, the church doesn't say, hey, go back down in fear because you spot a hard conclusion ahead in our logic. The church says, keep going, get past the pain and fear and keep going. And guess what I found? What I found was that when I started following the church's teaching and practicing natural family planning, I was able to know when I conceived. I was able to know when my children existed, even though five of them died before birth. I was able to know, and I find the most horrifying conclusion of all to be that I might have missed that. I might not have even known that they ever existed. But thanks to the church's teaching, I do know they existed, and that allows me to pray for them every day, just like I pray for the children I'm raising and the children who are already grown and moved out of my house. I have this whole abundant life as a mother where I can pray for all of my children because I know about them. So rather than in cowardly ignorance having, as Golden Ring suggested, having these funerals every month because I might have lost a child, I like better to say that since I knew they existed, I am satisfied that to the best of my ability, with the power of knowledge, I am able to love all my children unconditionally. And that's a much better prospect.
Dr. Trace, excuse me, I am really going to butcher your name today. I'm sorry. Dr. Stacy Trosenkos is one of our top favorite scientists. So you have a science degree, you have a theology degree, you're a mom. And so at all of these levels, these things are of great import to you. And I guess it's one of those things where we can sometimes see science, when we know the truth, it can be challenging to our faith to as you said, go forward, not backwards. Accept reality and move forward. I want to ask you when we come back a couple more questions about the science of the early stages of development. If you have questions or comments for Dr. Trosenkos, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Does science demolish pro-life arguments, or do those pro-life arguments remain whatever science may find? 888-318-7884 is our number. This is Catholic Answers Live, and we'll be right back.
Join us on air today on Catholic Answers Live.
As legend goes, it was 500 years ago that Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral, setting of a series of ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with our very special issue delving deep into the Protestant Reformation. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 818-487-2011 or going to Catholic.com. The heroes of the Counter-Reformation, the deadly errors of sola fide, and everything you want to know about how the Reformation played out. Just a few of the articles you can look forward to. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 818-487-2011 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 12, the Pharisees complain because Jesus' disciples were picking heads of grain and eating them on the Sabbath. Jesus confounded such casuistry by showing that necessity excused from the law. He reminded them of how David and his men had eaten the bread of offering from the temple because he was in great hunger and fleeing for his life. Jesus then said, "I say to you, something greater than the temple is here, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." When one is centered on the Lord and not on oneself, he can let the chips fall where they may. He will have no fear of displeasing the Lord. Even if he should make a mistake, he can be at peace because he is acting from a clean conscience. Besides, he knows that something greater than the temple is here, and that he is living his life before the face of a loving God. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
This is Catholic Answers Live, and welcome back to a super awesome Friday. That's what I'm calling this, super awesome Friday. Reproduction and chastity, and with great guests. But before we go back to our guests, and lines are filling up before we get to the calls, I want to take just a minute to invite you again, September 28th through 30th, to the Hyatt Regency La Jolla in beautiful sunny San Diego for our big conference, Catholic Answers Conference, the reunification of all Christians. But I don't think people will come if it's just me. So, John Sorensen is our chief operating officer.
Yes.
What do you got to say, John?
I have to say,
make it enticing.
I agree that people should come, and the reason they should come is because they're going to hear great talks all day long, and in the evening, if they're really lucky, they might catch us in the bar for a beer. That would be good.
That would be good.
Yeah. So there's that personal touch also.
Are you actually trying to like get people to buy you beer right now on the air? Like
they
it seems like you
No,
might
I don't want anybody to spend any money on me. I can do that myself. But I do like socializing. It's one of the things I love about our conferences is just meeting a lot of like-minded Catholics.
Yeah. And what speakers too this year. I mean, in addition to all the apologists here who will do their usual fantastic stuff. As a matter of fact, I think they actually bring their game up a little bit.
Yeah.
For these conferences.
Yeah.
And in addition to doing this radio program, we'll do a Friday radio program live.
Which is going to be awesome. Taking questions from
the audience. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. But we got Devin Rose coming, who wrote Crossing the Tiber. Is that
Navigating the Tiber. Yep.
All right. It was something about getting across the Tiber.
Yeah.
Steve Weidenkopf, just a fantastic historian and an all-around great guy. Like, you just love listening to
Steve. He wrote a book for us called The Glory of the Crusades,
which
is fantastic.
Which is kind of a thumb in the eye, I think, a little bit, that one.
Yeah.
Because people don't remember what really the Crusades were.
Yeah. And he breaks it down. It's complicated history, but he breaks it down really well.
And then Mark Brumley, of course.
Yes.
The president of Ignatius Press and super awesome dude. So how do you get there? Well, you just go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. You get your tickets. Seats are limited, and they are going fast, I have heard.
Yes.
The hotel is almost completely booked. So if you're coming from out of town, you want to make that reservations.
Yeah.
If you're local, the daily parking is only $8 a day, and you get in and out privileges. And the full conference ticket, I forgot to mention this, it includes the banquet, and we have a speaker at the banquet who you'd come just to hear him.
Yes.
Christopher Bloom.
Yep. From Augustine Institute.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. Where they have that's all geniuses at the Augustine.
Yes.
You have to be a genius to get hired there, I think.
I think you
you have to pass the Mensa exam or something.
Something, yeah.
At CatholicAnswersConference.com. John, can I change the subject on you for just a second while I got you here?
Sure, yeah.
I happen to know that you are a huge fan of Dr. Stacey Trisenkos.
She's awesome. Yeah. I follow her on Facebook.
She's right over there. Can you see?
I can see her on the screen. Hello.
Yeah. This is when Catholic Answers is really good.
The beauty of technology.
Yeah, right. Someone in Texas. Thanks.
Thanks for letting me come on and pitch the conference.
Do you have any questions for Dr. Trisenkos before you go?
No. I'll ask him online.
Look at the phones, though. They're all filled up.
She's popular.
You got to get out of here, man.
Yep, I will. See you.
All right. Thanks. CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Yep. Come to the conference. We'd love to see you there.
Thanks, John.
All right,
John Sorensen. Dr. Trisenko, sorry, taking up your time with our conference talk. But we got to get you to come to one of these conferences. But we have lots of calls. Do you mind if we go straight to calls? And then I'll mix in my questions as we go.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to Maria, listening to Immaculate Heart Radio. Your question for Dr. Trisenko.
Hi, I am a registered nurse, and I am looking into going into eating disorders for adolescent teens, and I know that doctors will prescribe oftentimes birth control for eating disorders because they lost their period because of the eating disorder, and I'm wondering, being a Catholic, am I ethically allowed to administer that for not the cause of birth control, but to help get the period back?
Yes, my understanding is that if it is for a medical reason, that it is permissible. However, personally, I would also, if it were me talking to a doctor about that, and I've been in this position, I would also want to know what the risks are, because birth control is, of course, hormonal treatments. And I would want to know what the situation is with my own body, like whether I was cycling or not, and whether I was likely to resume cycling. And I would want to know what the risk is of the birth control pill actually interfering with implantation. So I think it's a good conversation to have. It's not always an easy conversation to have, because sometimes doctors don't want to go talk about that. But I would push to make sure I understood the whole story about what's going on with the woman's body, too. But if it is for a medical purpose, that is permissible.
Maria?
Okay. Thank you.
Maria, just before you go, are you familiar with the National Catholic Bioethics Center? Like, if you ever got into a situation where you really weren't sure about a bioethics question, you can always call the National Catholic Bioethics. Oh, you are familiar with them.
Check with them.
I have heard heard of it, but that's a great link. Yeah, I'll definitely get in contact with them. Thank you.
Yeah, because something they're very, very good at is specific cases. They can help you work through the issues in specific cases. Maria, thanks so much for that call. We are talking, does science support or argue against the pro-life position? With Dr. Stacy Trisankos, our guest this hour. Richard in Colorado, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Your question for Dr. Trisankos. Richard? Richard?
Isn't actually, science isn't covering the idea of do unto the least of these and you do unto me.
Oh, so you want to know, should doctor, when talking about humans like at the embryonic stage of development, that should we use that argument that do unto the least of these, or whatever you do to the least of these, you do to me? Dr. Trisankos, what do you think of that?
I think that's an excellent point, and I definitely think you should use that. And here's why. If you are talking to an atheist or someone who is in support of abortion and you quote that, it's one of those things that really makes you stop and think, even if the other person may not seem to do so in the moment. But whatever you do to the least of these, you do unto me. That's the kind of thing a person will think about later on, like in the quiet hours of the night. And it is a faith statement. And I do support fully that when we talk about pro-life issues, we don't just say science supports that life begins at conception, because conception's not really a scientific word. Fertilization is the scientific word, and that's not an easy thing to say because there's a whole lot of chemical things that go on during the process of fertilization, more than we can even define as scientists. So it really pushes that logic to its fullest end. Whatever you do to the least, whatever you do to that absolute logical beginning as far as we can go with our science, whatever you do to those, you do unto Christ, because we're all created in the image and likeness of God. So I agree with you.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. That brings me to a question that I did want to ask you, if I may. There's a debate now about fertilization and pregnancy, and there's a desire among some to separate these as two different things, being pregnant and the new human life having completed fertilization. And I even – a few years ago, I know this drove almost everyone in the pro-life community crazy. The Washington Post actually did an article that said about when does pregnancy begin, and they – what's astonishing is they didn't talk to any scientists. They talked to one gynecologist who performed abortions himself. And the conclusion was, well, a woman's not pregnant until the zygote implants in the womb. Could you just address a little bit? Is that science what they're saying, or what's going on here?
It gets right back to what Richard said. It is not. This is what happens. Okay, I'm gonna judge, but this is what happens when someone sees a hard conclusion up ahead and shies away from the logic, and which is what I love about what Catholics do. We do not shy away from the logic. It's just moving the scale. It's like it's just a relativism. It's saying, okay, I don't want to say that life really begins when it begins. I want to say it begins at some other point. And there are a whole lot of medical professionals who say they are in agreement that pregnancy doesn't begin until implantation. But that doesn't mean that human life doesn't begin before that. I mean, there has to be an embryo already growing and developing to be able to implant. So everything I've read from the Catholic theology and also from the Carnegie stages, are you familiar with those? The Carnegie stages of embryonic development. It even says stage 1A, because stage 1 is broken down into stages. It defines the unicellular embryo that contains unique genetic material and is an individually specific cell that has the potential to develop into all of the subsequent stages of a human being. So there, that is the very beginning, before implantation, but still the beginning.
That's the astonishing thing, is that if you actually go to an embryology textbook, it will tell you where the beginning is. There's not a mystery about it at all. That certainly for mammals, we know how their lives begin. And yet, as you said, I think it's because of not wanting, it's a very strong point that you don't like the conclusion that will lead to, and so you back off following the logic. Dr. Stacey Trusankos is our guest this hour. We'll be right back with more on the early stages of human development, what we know, and what does that mean for the pro-life argument when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
Divine Intimacy Radio.
When you engage with the wisdom of saints this way, it stokes the fires of God in our hearts, encourages us, strengthens us, and gives us wisdom to deal with the difficulties of life. It also gives us wisdom that allows us to rise above all of the junk, to live with joy and peace in the midst of even the most difficult circumstances.
Divine Intimacy Radio, Sunday, 6:30 a.m., 1:30 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
As legend tells it, 500 years ago, a disaffected Augustinian priest nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral. The evidence that he actually did this is pretty thin, but Martin Luther's objections to Catholic teachings concerning purgatory and indulgences set off a series of countless ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. The faithful Catholic wants to be God's instrument in healing these ruptures, but may not know where to begin. Join us this September 28th to 30th as we tackle the topic at Catholic Answers' 4th National Apologetics Conference, the Reunion of All Christians, a lively and inspiring conference designed to ignite and inform your faith. We've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumlin, apologist Devin Rose, plus all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. This is an event you don't want to miss. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to leave you wanting more. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. This hour we are talking with our favorite Catholic scientist. I don't know how else to say it. I feel like there must be someone else who's being insulted by that when I say it. But I think our favorite Catholic scientist, chemist, Dr.
Name Stacy.
What?
Name Stacy.
Favorite Catholic scientist named Stacy. Dr. Stacy Trusankos.
Trusankos.
Trusankos. That's what I was. What did I say? Okay, Trusankos. Oh, yeah. All right. Stacy Trusankos. Even though you're my favorite Catholic scientist, I am probably never going to get that right. I don't know why. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We are talking about the current science of the early stages of human development in the womb suggest that maybe life doesn't have the value that pro-life people are saying that it has, that pro-life claims are maybe debunked by this science. If I may, we'll go right back to calls. Doctor, what about the argument that, okay, so yes, we get it that you love human life and you're pro-lifers and blah, blah, blah. And okay, so you're not convinced by the argument that says most human life might very well end in the womb, that most human beings who come into existence may never be born. Okay, that doesn't sway you. And then the arguments that pregnancy is not the same as fertilization, that doesn't sway you. But look, if we use these embryonic cells, we could start having miracles. We could start doing miracles with these things. I mean, the scientists cry out for these. Give us these embryos. So what do you make of that?
Well, I always come back to logic. I mean, I was a chemist before I was Catholic, and I was very logical when it came to analyzing my faith. Even when it came to being open to life, I was very, very analytical about it. And I wanted the truth, and I wasn't going to be afraid of the truth. But if you're talking about being swayed by these arguments and scientists saying that you know, that's not really the beginning of life, I think you just have to keep coming back to that. Well, there has to be a beginning. And if there is a beginning, it has to be at that very first moment that an embryo might exist. There is a book, I have it opened here because I bought it, chapter 4 in this college-level embryology textbook, Developmental Biology. It is called Fertilization, the Beginning of a New Organism. And when I first started thinking about all this stuff, I went online and I found a companion site to this textbook where the professor, Scott Gilbert, had posted an additional essay to this chapter called When Does Human Life Begin? And in that essay, he said he wondered whether a human zygote, he wondered, what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be human? Is a zygote or an embryo alive? Is a zygote or an embryo a human being? And I emailed the guy. I found his email address and I emailed him and I said, why is a developmental biologist who wrote a textbook and chapter 4 is titled Fertilization, the Beginning of a New Organism, why are you asking that question just specifically if an organism is a human, it might not be alive? Or it might not be a human being. Why are you asking that? Well, I never got an answer. I got arguments back, like you were saying, Sai. I got those arguments back. But I posed the question nonetheless. And I don't know if there's any relation to it whatsoever, but a few years later, that essay was taken down and replaced with another one about personhood.
Right.
But the point is, keep going with the logic. Just keep sticking to that. We have what makes sense on our side, even if it gets hard. If I hadn't followed the hard logic, I wouldn't have learned to love more. I wouldn't have learned to face death. I wouldn't have learned to really embrace life the way that I've learned to.
What if we were to ask the question this way? Is an embryo or a human in an embryonic stage, is that a member of our species? Would there be a scientific answer to that?
Yes. It's called taxonomy. It's not a spider. It's not a chimpanzee. It's not a member of any other species. Of course, it's a member of our species. And again, when somebody asks questions like that, it's a good point. You know, if you'll notice, I don't always respond directly to the scientific part of those questions. Like, yes, we all know we could break it down in the science. But I try to go beyond that. Like, why are you even asking that question? I do this with evolution, too. Why are you even asking that question? If somebody's asking whether a human embryo is a member of the human species, what they're really saying is, I just can't. I'm not ready to accept all of the ramifications that go with admitting this truth.
That makes perfect sense. Well, let's go to Jane in California listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Jane, your question for Dr. Stacy. That's what I'm saying, Dr. Stacy.
Yes. This is regarding someone I know who is not Catholic. She is pro-life, and she uses an IUD. And I'm wondering, does an IUD prevent fertilization?
It prevents implantation. So here's again that full logic. It can prevent. One of the ways it can work is that if an embryo is conceived, if a zygote forms through the process of fertilization and then starts to grow, it can prevent it from implanting, which is like denying it its rightful natural home in the mother's womb. It can interfere with implantation. That's not the only way it can work, but that is a possibility. And as Catholic women, we do not want to even open ourselves to that possibility. We're not supposed to use IUDs.
Person is not Catholic, but is pro-life.
Yeah.
So for that person, the question is there a possibility that the IUD is actually aborting the child?
Yeah.
You said it better than me.
So what is the answer to that?
The answer is it might.
It might be aborting.
And you might not know. That's the thing. If you use an IUD, you probably will never in your life know whether it happened or not. And to me, that was reason enough never to even go there. It's like it's not even a possibility then, because you wouldn't know if you ever did conceive a child and then that child died because of the IUD. You wouldn't know. I mean, there's a lot. But what you're bringing up, Jane, there are a lot of issues that pro-life people haven't fully thought about. with contraception, with in vitro fertilization. There are a lot of issues. They simply don't realize that the human life begins so early and that these things interfere with human life or kill human life.
Does that help you, Jane?
Yes, thank you. And it's something doctors should explain, but they're probably not going to.
Exactly.
Well, I suppose it depends on the doctor. We have some I know here in San Diego we have some wonderful pro-life doctors and ministries and all that, but I imagine it would depend on the doctor. I guess another horrible conclusion that you have to come to, and this may prevent you from accepting the logic that an embryonic human being is of the species, of our species, is the fact that so many are frozen, that tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, are currently frozen in nitrogen.
Yeah, there's that. And if they're frozen, or if you use in vitro fertilization, there are lots of embryos that are created and that die because they don't implant. And of course, people say, well, that happens naturally anyway, right? I thought you said 30 to 80% die because many of them don't implant. That's true. But that's where you get into the fine line differences and why I appreciate the hard logic. There's a difference in naturally dying and interfering and causing the death of. There's killing.
Yes, right. Let's go to Matt somewhere in California, listening on 840 AM. Matt, your question for Dr. Stacy.
I appreciate you taking my call. I am a born-again Christian. I consider myself a Bible believer. I take the controversial view that life, a human soul, actually begins at birth when they take their first breath. But my question is, if, let's say, a child miscarried at, like, 7 months, you know, a horrible thing like that, if we're going to be logical and if we're going to be consistent, shouldn't there be an investigation by the authorities? Because how do we know that the woman didn't actually deliberately kill her child? I mean, if we had it our way and we could do laws our way, shouldn't there be an investigation just as there would be for, let's say, a three-year-old who was suddenly killed, you know, in a truck? You know, there'd be an investigation to find out if it was murder or not. So if a child was miscarried later on in term, let's just say, shouldn't there be an investigation by authorities, wouldn't you think?
Well, it seems like there should be. I mean, the way I reason through that, there is even though an embryo is a human, there's still a natural difference in what the embryo, I mean, the embryo has totipotent cells in it that can form into any of the organs. There are natural differences. There's also a natural difference in what we can know as far as investigators. And that's one of the things, I mean, you're making a great point. It's one of the things the atheists respond to specifically. They say, well, shouldn't women take their tampons to the sheriff's office? I'm quoting them. Shouldn't they take their tampons to the sheriff's office to have them investigated? Because, you know, you think a child may have died in there and you think that child needs to have the right of a full funeral. So if you're following your logic, shouldn't you do something like that? The response to that is there's still a difference. I mean, we're not saying that an embryo is the same as Cy Kellett. They're different. I mean, they're natural differences. A two-year-old is naturally different from a mature person. So there's really no way. I mean, if we did enact some kind of legislation where we tried to find out every single embryo that died from miscarriage and figure out whether the woman caused it or not, it's not enforceable in a civil society. We can't do that. And that's where, you know, we're Christians. Civil society is going to do the best that it possibly can to enact just laws. But ultimately, justice and mercy belong to God. So I think just on the fact alone that it's unenforceable as a law in a society, we shouldn't do that.
Matt?
Yes.
Your response?
I guess my response would be, and just for the record, I'm against abortion too. I believe it's demonic. I wouldn't say that it's murder, but if under the idea that it is murder, would the just law, like I said, if we had our way, would a just law and a woman that had a miscarriage and it was deemed intentional, under the Catholic faith, would that murder then be the capital sin that would prevent that person from ever going to heaven?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Doctor. I just want to interrupt. There's not a sin that you commit that prevents you from going to heaven. Everyone at any moment can be – well, we already are forgiven, but at any moment we can repent and accept God's mm-hmm. forgiveness. The Catholic Church does not believe, oh, I've done a bad thing, and it's so bad now, I'm excluded. That's not the case, and that's – I think – I'm sorry to interrupt you. Doctor, but I just wanted to make that point because I sometimes think people feel that I've done something so horrible, now I'm out. And there's nothing that excludes you from the presence of God so long as you want to be forgiven and welcomed into the presence of God.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Is Matt still there?
I don't know. Matt? Yeah. Well, nope. Matt's not there.
But that was a good question he had. That was a very good question. And I mean, to answer it, no, I don't think they should be investigated because I don't think it's reasonable.
Yeah, it seems that if there's something is impossible to know, what it would be the purpose of the investigation or very close mm-hmm. to impossible to know. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Time is running out to help Catholic Answers' annual summer campaign. It's a crucial time because we need to offset the drop in donations that occurs every summer. We're making progress toward our goal, but we still need you to help. Souls are on the line, and your help lets us reach millions of people every year. Catholic Answers publishes books, booklets, CDs, and digital content, bringing you the best in Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Our flagship publication, Catholic Answers Magazine, is the leading journal of Catholic apologetics. Catholic Answers speakers reach tens of thousands of people every year. Every single month, more than 1 million people visit Catholic Answers' website, Catholic.com. We also encourage people across the country and around the world through online social media, including Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other online platforms. We maintain a staff of full-time apologists to answer questions by phone and email from people who need personalized help. Catholic Answers Live features prominent leaders in the church and answers listeners' questions on every aspect of church life. It's available to you by radio, online, and now it's seen on EWTN television. If you care about your Catholic faith and want to see it grow, please help Catholic Answers continue this vital work. To hear how you can help Catholic Answers, visit Catholic.com and click the 2017 Summer Campaign banner. That's the 2017 Summer Campaign banner at Catholic.com.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Super Friday edition. Dr. Stacy Triscanos with us this hour. I know. And next hour, Jason Everett. So if you have questions about chastity or maybe teaching chastity, practicing chastity, all those questions, Jason is just wonderful at answering those. Let's try to get to as many calls as we can this segment, if we can. So we'll go to Karen in Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening on 990 AM. That's Ave Maria Radio. Karen, your question.
I was wondering why they don't say that the fetus can feel pain at 6 days, because that's when the brain and the spinal cord is developed.
So you're saying that science is showing that we have a brain and a spinal cord at 6 days of development, and that would mean that the child would feel pain upon being aborted?
Yeah, the pro-life should be saying that instead of the 12 weeks.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
How do we answer that?
Well, I would personally be hesitant to say that the fetus can feel pain, or the embryo at that point can feel pain, because we don't have any way to really know that. There is a developing spinal cord and a developing brain, but they're not, we don't know whether they're, and they're probably not developed enough to feel any kind of pain. In general, though, I think I've always been in favor of the pro-life arguments that just keep going back to that first principle. It doesn't matter for pro-life arguments whether they can feel pain or not. Now, it might matter to sway someone to think about hurting a baby. That might matter in the emotional sway. But just logically speaking, it doesn't matter whether they feel pain or not. We still don't, we don't say that it's okay to kill someone because that person can't feel pain. But why don't the pro-life people say that? I think it's wisely because they can't be sure about it. And you don't want to say something that is scientifically true and if you're not sure that it is.
Excuse me. It's just because their muscles and their bones are not developed that they cannot move away from whatever is damaging them. And so that's the way that they can't measure it.
But yeah. That's, isn't that your point, Dr. Trusenkos, that you can't know it? There's not empirical evidence of it, so you don't want to argue that it's a scientific fact.
Right. And I think it's better just to argue that you don't need that to be a scientific fact. We're not relying on that to be true. And it's really like the word feel as a scientist, I don't know how to quantify that. And I would be hesitant to lay an argument. I would be hesitant to argue that it can in fact feel pain, because I don't think it's possible to know that.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. God bless you guys.
You too. God bless you. Thank you, Karen. We go now to Paul in Chicago watching on YouTube. Thanks for calling, Paul. Thanks for everybody who watches us on YouTube, Facebook, and Periscope. Paul, your question, please.
My question is indirect abortion canon or part of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, or is it a theological idea that's not yet part of the CCC?
What is indirect abortion part of the canon? Do you know what that means?
Catechism of the Catholic Church, the end nor means.
Go ahead, Dr. Trusenkos.
Canon law, I'm not a canon lawyer, but I don't think there's any canon that deals with indirect abortion. I could be wrong. Let's define the terms. Indirect abortion would mean that as a consequence of something else, the child died. Like if you had to treat the mother to keep her alive and as a result of that, it caused the child to die. You get into a whole lot of ethical nuances when you get into that. But you can come back to the first principle that you should never cause another person's death. If the doctors are trying to save the mother and it indirectly but not intentionally kills the child, that there are cases where that is not unethical. But it depends on a lot of other things related to that case. So probably the church guidance there is sticking to first principles. You can't directly will the death of an innocent person. And then when you get into whether it's okay to indirectly cause an abortion because of X, Y, or Z, it depends on what X, Y, and Z are.
Paul?
Okay, thank you. That cleared up a lot of confusion between indirect abortion and abortion. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
Good question, Paul.
Call anytime. 888-318-7884, our number. 888-31-TRUTH. Our topic, does science trash pro-life arguments? I'm starting to approach now with some sense of confidence, Dr. Trusenkos, that the answer is no.
No, it can't. You need to understand the limits of science. And this is one of the things I talk about, not just related to this topic, but across the board, whether it's evolution or cosmology or free will and quantum mechanics. The limits of science are that science quantifies and categorizes objects in motion. I mean, even when science and biology studies life, biology doesn't deem or dictate what life is. It studies life once it already exists. It's like saying that the Big Bang Theory tells us about what happened in the beginning, but it doesn't tell us who the origin of everything is. God is the origin, but the beginning is the beginning in time. Well, it's the same with life. Life begins at some point, and we can try our best as scientists to figure it out. But we also have to always remember that the origin of all of us, our souls, our bodies, our personhood, is from God. Going back to that scripture that says that God knew us before he knit us in the womb.
Right. And but it's funny that a lot of times we see science as almost wanting to deny the existence of the soul. Say, well, you know, well, actually, we do see a lot of scientists now, mm-hmm. but cognitive scientists and neurologists and whatnot saying, no, there's no evidence for the soul. But at the same time, wanting to make the argument that, well, you're not really human until you have some feature that almost seems spiritual. You're like, mm-hmm. well, until you have, you know, passed into this world, like it doesn't, it seems like we're trying to have our argument both ways.
Yes. That logic doesn't make any sense, because I did sort through all of this when I was converting. It really doesn't make sense. No matter how you spin it, if you deny the soul, you are stuck with materialism. No matter, I mean, they say that the soul emerges from the body. Okay, but it's still saying the soul is dependent on the body. And I loved, when I took the class in my theology studies on the doctrine of the Holy Trinity, it was like the heavens parted and I saw so much truth that I never understood. I understood what it meant to be a person, a substance with an individual nature, a rational substance with an individual nature. I understood by studying the Holy Trinity how the Son is begotten of the Father and the Son is one in love, spirate the Holy Spirit. That explains why we have the powers of intellect and free will. It explains why we can think. All of that intellect and free will, that's not physics. It's beyond physics. And I really started to understand for the first time that science is wonderful in its sphere of what it is. Science is wonderful to explain to us the handiwork of God. And we can study the handiwork of God and get to know God better by studying how he created everything. But it's only part of the story. We have to see, to quote Frank Sheed, we have to see science in the totality to which it belongs. And it's like that with human life. It's like that with everything.
We go now to Manuel in California, listening on 1260 AM. Manuel, your question for Dr. Trisankos.
Hi there. I just have to say, and I don't mean to be combative whatsoever, I grew up being Christian. But for reasons that are like completely unaware to me, I sort of lost my faith in Christianity, and it really hurt when it happened. But I wanted to say that I was curious about the term pro-life and why it focuses on life within the womb, but then after the fact, it doesn't necessarily regard life overall. Like starving children in other countries, the third world countries, or even just, you know, children in our streets.
Manuel, I'm really sorry about this, but we're coming right up against the end. So is that enough for Dr. Trisankos to address, or did you want to put it in the form of a question?
I think that could be enough, yes. I just wanted to...
So why so much concern for prenatal life and maybe not life after?
Yeah, I don't find that to be true. Like, specifically, when we're talking about pro-life, usually we're talking about the first 9 months. But that's not all there is to being Catholic or to being pro-life. That's part of it. But for me, helping to understand and get all that straight, it helped me understand the rest. It helped me understand being a mother and a sister and a friend to all the other people in my life.
Dr. Stacy Trisankos, thanks so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.
And next hour, Jason Everett will be here, and I am expecting I will probably mispronounce his name like 10 or 12 times, too, because I say Everett instead of Everett. So, my mouth's warmed up now. Maybe I'll do better. We'll see you in just a few minutes with a discussion of chastity with the very fine Jason Everett right after this on Catholic Answers Live.